again?
Well, no, I have just turned the recording back on to get this right now. He refers to a mini pizza. His mother offers a mini pizza. However, he then describes a bagel bite. These are two distinct things.
Is this was I way off base with this?
No, sir. Okay. A mini pizza, a McCain's mini pizza.
McCain's or Pillsbury?
Oh shit.
So this is, I mean, I think they're nonetheless the same product.
Yeah. But. You get two in a package, right? You put them on a plate, you put it in the microwave or the oven if you're fancy.
You know what I like doing? Oven. I like taking Triscuits and I like putting spaghetti sauce on them, and I like putting cheese on top of that.
Sorry, do you have 28 minutes for a mini pizza?
No, I have 90 seconds on
Exactly.
Right. Hey, KBT fans, thank you very much for your patience as you've been waiting for our episode on Men in Black 2.
I mean, like, I think it's worth the wait.
So many ideas that the world has been waiting for contained within this episode.
Which no one asked for, but here you go.
You're just getting it as a gift. So again, thank you for your patience. We've been delayed a little bit, but we're returning to a semi-regular release schedule now.
And without further ado,
we now return you to our regularly scheduled episode for Men in Black 2.
And we are gathered here today to talk about a really
movie we've yet talked about.
Yeah, but like far.
You did review Mission Impossible 2 at one point.
We're not that's not even the agenda yet.
Even if
Jeff.
You take the hardest take on
okay. But I think I've come up with like just a better answer. Like, why do smart people love these movies? And it's not even that. Like, I'll come up with a better question. Yeah, we're smart people. We love these movies. Like,
do you love this movie?
Okay. Have we started yet? No, we haven't started yet. Okay.
I believe a version, for me, anyways, a version of me could love this movie. I have seen a number of movies that I've loved on first take and then watched 4 or 5 years later in a different mentality and then realized,
no,
this was not a good movie, but I just happened to be on a plane with screaming children in the background.
And it was your escape.
It was the escape. Or
it was the thing that kept you safe.
Or it was 2 a.m. and I found a, you know, bowl of cheese puffs. And that was just the day for me.
Kim, Jeff, how do you two know each other?
We went to school together. We did our undergrad together. However, we didn't really know each other. It was a pretty small school, like 2,000 students. But the thing is, Billy, Jeff lived in the terrible residence. He lived in Windsor, and I just couldn't talk to anyone who lived
terrible
in Windsor.
Terrible residence because it was like the party scary times residence, or just terrible like
I think it made everyone else jealous. I mean, I walked past a coffee shop today that had the comment, you know, haters gonna hate, and kind of that's been the motto, I think, for our residents.
I just, Windsor was big, Windsor was loud, and I was above it.
So that's how you two got to, because that's not as good as the story of how I met Jeff.
No, it's not, and I think you should tell that story right now.
Okay, so we were on the Toronto Islands for your birthday, Kim.
Yep.
And you decided we wanted to rent bikes.
Yep.
And all they had left were tandem bikes.
Yeah, the bicycle built for two.
Yeah, so Jeff and I got partnered up. Jeff, would you say you're like 3 feet taller than me? Like, what's the size difference?
On that day, we were the same height.
Okay, same height in spirit. But it looked like, you know, like when Frodo and Gandalf are on the horse cart together. It was like that, but on a tandem bike. So your legs considerably longer than mine. I very nearly died.
I was extremely tired during that bike ride, and now it definitely makes a lot more sense.
So there is one of my favorite pictures ever.
No, it's my favorite picture of all time, because these are two men that I love dearly meeting each other for the first time, and in the photo.
This is when we've come back.
Is it the one where your hands are literally 2 inches from Jeff's ass?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Two inches is being generous. We've just come back from the trip, and Jeff, you look happier than I've ever seen anyone, and I look 30 seconds away from a stroke. Like, I am truly exhausted, like at the absolute limits of my physical abilities.
With his hands very close to this new man.
Like, trying to not just put them on your butt to, like, support myself, and, yeah.
I actually completely forgot about that photo until you brought it up. Oh. And I can't believe that we talked about Jeff and Kim's relationship and how they know each other as opposed to how we know each other.
Well, I was expecting a better story.
Well, no, like the coda to that story is I'm being really hard. Windsor was a great residence. It was just big and we didn't really know each other. And we sort of reconnected again when you came to Toronto, which is where we are. And you and your partner were part of our friend group. And now we have a great friend group and we see each other on a regular basis. And sometimes I get to hang out with your kid, who is the coolest.
Definitely. Coolest. I mean, compared to her father, but
yes. and so
who could be so cool, really?
I have wanted to get a guest host on here, like right from the top. And when Kim told me your reaction to our episode on Mission Impossible 2, I was like, well, it's got to be Jeff.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you the space here that you need
to be completely wrong about Mission Impossible 2, aka one of the greatest movies of all time.
If you haven't listened to that episode, I think the summary is that we liked it
a lot.
Maybe more than any other movie we've reviewed.
liked it is a bit, it's a bit light. I think there is some sort of kind of undeniable infatuation with what in my mind might be one of the most, it's funny because it's Mission Impossible, but that plot was beyond implausible in my mind. And I'm willing to accept a lot in movies. My genre, as my partner describes it, is B-rated sci-fi movies with a very low critics rating and a very high audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, that's your sweet spot.
And that's my sweet spot. I'm willing to accept a lot of things, but there were far too many gaps in that movie for me. And again, I think it's one of those things where if you're in the mood for it and you're ready for John Woo, then you're ready for that movie. But I rewatched it and I've rewatched it again and again. And maybe 12-year-old me really enjoyed it. But I can tell you 25-year-old me and 30-year-old me was ready to go back to some random movie called Spectre or Planet X on Netflix.
So can you offer an example of such a gap? Because I find it gapless.
Yes.
Oh, the greatest one of all time is right after probably one of the best scenes. I will argue that this is one of the best scenes ever is when Ethan Hawke somehow in a minute and a half.
I would 100% watch Mission Impossible with Ethan Hawke.
Oh, right. Sorry. I always call him Ethan Hawke.
He's just kind of like sad, you know, listening to like early grunge.
Yeah.
As we discussed earlier.
His hair is much greasier.
As we discussed earlier, I actually don't know actors. I only know characters themselves, but
you were so close though, Ethan Hunt.
Nonetheless, after Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise, I do know that actor, mm-hmm. Switched the faces prior to going in to the room where the deal was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the plausibility of him able to get that mask on, I think the biggest issue that I took from that was he was standing behind the two people that he could have easily just grabbed a gun and killed and walked away with everything that he needed in order for the movie to end.
But then he wouldn't have a dramatic motorcycle fight in the air with like his nemesis.
And this is where I think the issue comes in. If I'm
a
bit more relaxed, I want that motorcycle fight. So I'm a little more likely to want it. So I'm willing to forego those. But on that day, no, I couldn't.
Ethan Hunt is not a cold-blooded assassin. If he's going to kill you, you're going to have a motorcycle in your hand and facing him, and it'll be on a beach.
Yes. And his hair will be flowing beautifully in the wind.
I think Mission Impossible 3, I would let it go because they would have established that level of just grandeur and just absolute kind of outwardness that would anything goes. But Mission Impossible 2, I can't let it go. You need to tighten up.
Well, despite our disagreement on that wonderful movie, we have invited you here today to talk about a movie that I find far more difficult to talk about.
You know what? I'm just going to give a hot take right here. I went into this movie expecting to hate it because I haven't seen it since it came out. And as I was watching it, like, I'll admit, I was biased. I was ready to be angry. I was nitpicking. And there were things to nitpick, believe me. But I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought I would.
It got very good halfway through.
Yeah.
I went very same mentality as you. And something clicked halfway through where I said, this isn't awful.
Yeah, I think it's a great movie that we should all just watch once a decade. But no, actually, I have other things to say, which I am more troubled about.
You two are fucking crazy. This is far and away the worst thing we've watched for this podcast.
Okay, I do have critical things to say.
Impossible to get through.
Please walk in with the same glasses you put on to watch Mission Impossible 2 to watch Men in Black 2, and you can walk away with at least some enjoyment.
Fair enough.
Touché. Okay, I'll give you this. I will keep an open mind. I will try to be persuaded.
Now, but the biggest question I think at the heart of this is, I mean, are we talking Temple of Doom stage, though, when we get to this? And that's how I budget everything.
Okay, I'm going to need you to expand on that comment. When you say Temple of Doom stage.
Well, when you look at Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, fantastic
perfect
film.
Perfect movie, yeah.
I think, yeah, probably perfect. If not, maybe a few flaws, but that's also with the test of time. And I rewatched the Indiana franchise not so long ago, and it really withstood the test of time with, obviously, some leeway.
Sure.
Yes, we will discuss that another time. But I think one of the big things is Temple of Doom, even now when I rewatched it, really stood out as just a complete outlier in the series. So I use that as my basis for how bad is the sequel. And okay, if it's Temple of Doom stage, it's not Crystal Skull unwatchable, but not far off.
See, I would rank Temple of Doom pretty far ahead of this one as far as sequels. And here's why. I can identify pieces that I like of Raiders of the Lost Ark within Temple of Doom, even if the whole isn't working. Like, I think there are some pretty legitimately great action set pieces and some pretty legitimately great character moments for Dr. Jones in Temple of Doom. Even if on the whole, we could sit here and have a 9-hour discussion about...
You guys, we will if we keep talking about Indiana Jones. We got to bring it back. There's so much to say, especially about Temple of Doom, which just...
It's true. Even opening that box for a second.
I apologize. We have to close that. Like, it literally is the Lost Ark.
Yes, it is. We got to close it.
Don't look directly at it.
Pin is put in it for future reference. But now we actually have to bring it back to the reason why we three grown adults are here, gathered in my apartment, to talk about Men in Black 2.
I mean, I'm just going to keep sitting on my thoughts about Temple of Doom. Maybe they're going to pop up later. But yes, okay, let's get into it. So you have your questions that you want to answer for this movie.
Yeah, so I think they're going to change and evolve a little bit. But the first question is just simple. Is this movie good? Is it or is it bad? And just explain why. And then what was the point of this movie? Like, what is the takeaway? Because stories matter. And what did this movie contribute to the world?
Okay. Honored guest, would you like to begin?
Let's start with number two first, because it's probably the easiest to answer, which is nothing. I feel like it actually embodies a lot of the issues that you see with sequels, and they're just no value. Mm-hmm. It's a rehash of the same jokes. Goes through everything. It reminded me of watching, and again, I'm going to rehash everything because it reminded me of watching Back to the Future, the second one, because it just rehashed the exact same jokes in a slightly different setting with no new real value being added.
You are trampling all over so many of my favorite sequels right now. It makes me want to take back that tandem bike ride. But that's okay. Kim, you were about to say.
I'm sorry, I've just been distracted again by the photo and just remembering hand placement and butt placement. Okay, I think you're right. I think what made this movie good, we actually get in the first movie. And so even though as much as I really enjoyed the dynamic between Agent J and Agent K, it wasn't enough to justify an entire sequel, especially if the movie, quite frankly, is offensive at parts, and it sort of tarnishes just how good the first movie was as well.
I think that's fair. That's pretty fair. I found while I was watching it the amount of times, and this movie was not filmed that long ago, where it was cringeworthy at times. And I think once you got past the first half, those cringeworthy movements kind of went away.
Yeah.
And those cringeworthy moments kind of dissipated. But in that first half, the opening scene alone,
You know what?
Do we want to talk about the fake kind of sci-fi movie, or do we want to jump into the actual
alien spacecraft? So I think we should just dive in from the very start. So, like, I think this movie's first mistake is neuralizing everyone through the Columbia lady at the very start. Because to me, it's like, you don't understand neuralizers. Like, are you blinding us at the very beginning to, like, teach us that the movie is the truth? Because that's not how Men in Black work. They're blinding you because they want you to forget everything about it. So I just, like, that was a problem for me. I don't know if anyone else thought about that.
I honestly didn't see it. I think I was grabbing a drink during the intro.
Well, I thought it was inconsistent. It was like, whoever wrote this doesn't understand the concept of neuralizers.
So I kind of dug the like, fake conspiracy theory show tape. I found that kind of funny. And then when it cut to actual space and the real thing, my first thought was that last week we talked about, like, why is this movie good? Because it looks amazing. It's, mm-hmm. it's like some of the best special effects of the 90s. From the second the actual movie kicks in, this thing looks awful. These are terrible special effects.
Yeah.
That's fair. I think the special effects are absolutely atrocious. But what I will say, that opening scene when I watched it this time, what it got me thinking, and maybe I've just been watching far too much sci-fi in my life in general.
It's your sweet spot.
Which I don't think it's a bad thing. Maybe. We'll see if the intervention goes through. But, one of the things is I watched that and all I thought in that opening scene was, well, no, the Men in Black created this movie in order to throw off the scent of the actual public. And maybe I was just a little too deep on the Men in Black side, and maybe I was a little too far-fetched, but that really got me into the opening.
It is a very good question. Why did they allow the National Enquirer and the tabloids to, like, leak out some of the news? Like, why aren't they just going around neuralizing everybody?
Well, did we get neuralized, though, at the start? And the fact that they're showing us this movie is because they want us to think that this is the truth, when actually, you guys, it's just...
We had just watched a much better movie and they erased it from our brains.
Yeah. I would have absolutely loved if they had actually used that in the plot. And I think, for me, that would have actually saved the overall movie as a whole.
Yeah. I will say, watching the credits, and again, just like feeling a little jarred from going from the conspiracy movie back into the opening that I was expecting, like, mm-hmm. from the first film, I was shocked to see who starred in here, Johnny Knoxville and Rosario Dawson.
Johnny Knoxville and Lara Flynn Boyle were both surprises for me. I forgot that they were both in this. And then Rosario Dawson pops up. I'm like, okay, so wait, this is going to be a great movie. This movie must be fantastic. This is a great cast. And then the movie continued.
The movie continued.
You mean the reminder of all the big names from the 90s that we all forgot.
I actually forgot Johnny Knoxville until I saw his name, and I was like, oh, him.
I think that was literally one of my notes. I forgot Johnny Knoxville was a person in history.
Also, listeners, I have to point out that as much as I love making fun of Jeff, he typed up notes for this.
This is like putting me to shame. Our guest has arrived far better prepared than either of us. I know. It is good. This is keeping us on our toes.
Yeah, exactly.
To be fair, notes is a bit, you know, a bit out there. I would say it's a stream of consciousness mixed with far too many hashtags for someone of my age and far too many quotation marks and a lot of capital letters and a lot of references to health and safety incidents that should have been reported to HR, honestly, at the MIB headquarters, because
the health and safety incidents.
Well, that corporate headquarters is operating like absolute cowboys. There's no way that would be allowed.
Okay. I look forward to hearing some of your notes for their HR team. Okay. So, we're past the credits. The alien has landed, and it crawls out. There's conveniently a magazine there. Sure, I can buy that there's litter. The fact that it opens to the Victoria's Secret model, mm-hmm. it just sets a tone right off the bat. Like, why does the alien have to be a Victoria's Secret model?
Well, and this, like, it upset me so much because Men in Black 1, you got Vincent D'Onofrio playing the bug, and every single part of that is thought through, from the makeup to the digital effects they're putting on, to his costume, to the way he walks, to the way he speaks, everything. And this one, they were like, what if it's like a lady in her underwear?
Yeah.
She snakes sometimes, but, like, you know.
And then the most upsetting fucking thing happens. She is newly, like, the Victoria's Secret model in the middle of the woods, and then a fucking rapist immediately pops out of nowhere.
What the fuck was that?
Like, first of all, on a practical note, the rapist was so close and it happened so quickly. How did he not see her transforming?
He would surely be so surprised that an underwear lady just popped up out of the ground, he would not be that quick to be like someone, he's just right there.
He was so quick on the draw that, I mean, I feel like he's been in that situation before. He's not.
Like, he's X-Men in Black. And he's like, you know what? I think sometimes shape-shifting aliens land in this park.
Well, if that truly was his intent, then I'm super glad she ate him immediately. But, like, it was still just, like, a gross thing to happen. Like, why write that scene in the first place?
You could have actually left that scene out of the entire movie. And that was my first thought is, why is this in here? And then I remembered. I'm like, well, you know, it was back then. No, that movie was not that long ago.
2002.
And it should have just been written out of it. Yeah. But I guess.
And, like, that is what is wrong with this movie. The fact that this movie thinks that sort of joke is okay. I know in Men in Black 1, there was a little bit of just the worst part of that movie is when, oh my gosh, I've already forgotten her name. Our mortician.
Laurel, played by Linda Fiorentino.
Yes, she's pointing down at her leg.
There's something I need to show you.
And Will Smith just makes like really awkward, like,
well, okay. So this was my thought watching this movie, is that this is how much care and attention would go into the female characters, is that last time they had a character named Laurel. This time they were like, Laura. Can we, Laura? Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. We got it.
Yeah.
Good. Laura, who will end up being the most important part of this movie, who there literally came a point somewhere 2/3 into this where I was like, did I miss 15 minutes of this movie? Because I don't understand how we got here.
Yeah.
Because she goes to play Twister and like disappears from the movie. And then all of a sudden.
But even that is gross. So right before that happens, let's just talk about the weird way that violence against women is treated as comedy in this movie. When she walks into the gross little bugs, when Laura and Agent J, Will Smith, walk into the apartment and he's taking her there for safekeeping as they go to fight the other alien, he is telling her to watch out for one of the aliens. And like the four little creepy guys, like it's kind of their thing to like make lecherous jokes, whatever. But then Agent J says to her, don't fall asleep. And like, it's meant to be funny. And like in the moment, like I'll be very candid and I will say like, I had a bit of a hot moment before my brain caught up and went, oh my God.
Well, and then it gets weird because later in the movie, we're going to see her playing Twister with those bugs. And I think that's one of the better special effects in the movie where all the bugs are clinging off her. But then I was just like, where are those bug hands going?
And I don't know why they felt those jokes were warranted.
They weren't. Needed. It
funny.
It could have been an absolutely fantastic movie if they had actually carved that out and just threw in just a bit of other actually well-written comedy.
Yeah. It just like, I guess more than anything else, it made me sad to think about all the conditioning that made me laugh for that one moment. Like Will Smith, his delivery of the line, it was funny, like, don't fall asleep. And then the way that he left, I actually felt like so angry with myself. Like, why on earth, like, did I laugh? And
I think that's part of, I mean, I might be a bigger fan of Will Smith's movies in general, but I just, his delivery of lines is just fantastic in my mind.
He's perfect. And he's pretty perfect in this movie. Like again, watching.
I'm not going to argue that he's bad. Watching this one so close after watching Men in Black 1, it's like he's on tranquilizers here. Like he is so much better than he is here. What's the word I'm looking for here?
They're not bringing their
neutered
a little bit. It's like, you know, a paycheck performance. It's like
if I were to watch Men in Black 1 then Men in Black 2, I would walk out.
Okay.
Now if I watch Men in Black 2 on its own, I would say this is just an absolutely terrible movie, but I'll sit through it because, well, it's only 8:45 and I can't go to bed yet.
And I will totally give you this. Will Smith at 50% is still better than most people at 100%.
Yeah. And honestly, like the best part of this movie is watching him and Tommy Lee Jones engage with one another. And that dynamic, what made it so special in the first movie is Tommy Lee Jones' straight man, who is also actually hilarious, versus Will Smith's just larger than life, over the top, but like heart of gold kind of like performances juxtaposing each other. And that is still here. But you nailed it earlier, Jeff, when you said, like it's just recycled from the first movie. They don't really grow the relationships. They don't. Well, I guess they kind of do in that in this movie, Jay develops a crush on Laura, and like you see the sacrifices he's made to be a man in black. He's lonely forever, which was actually kind of sad.
Laura, who did I get this right? Is Kay's daughter?
So I had questions.
Are we going to dive into some biological? Real, like, I went really deep on this, to be honest.
Okay, go.
Okay, this, I actually had to bring out a scrap piece of paper while I was going, because I wasn't sure they wanted it to be as simple as they wanted. Maybe, again, I just wanted there to be more to this movie than there actually was. My understanding is that that is Kay's daughter, and I don't think there was much more to it.
Do you know for sure that it's Kay's daughter? Because, I had a moment where I was like, okay, no, but that would be too weird because then Jay is in love with his daughter and that's just... Well,
because Jay asks him, after she's gone away, Kay, gives us a little plot dump and he's like, blah, 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 they came down and then yada, yada, and then I hit the thing, blah, blah, blah. And then Jay takes a minute and he's like, so she had a daughter? Kay, did you? And then he cuts him off. He just looks at him. But it sounds like he's asking, did you impregnate the...
I totally missed that. I'm pretty sure
she's his daughter.
No, she has to be.
Yeah, okay.
They tried to dumb it down as much as possible in this movie. And I think that is one of those things that...
So now I don't know how I feel about the fact that Tommy Lee Jones, I guess, was supportive of Jay being in love with his kid.
So I did have this. I was like, at least they didn't go for the cheap and easy, don't you dare date my daughter kind of joke. But at the same time, Kay is awfully enthusiastic to get her into a spaceship.
Yeah, I was going to say, was he faking empathy the whole time?
Oh, yeah, sure. Love her. You should quit your job for her. But also, she's getting on that plane. She's
to be fair, with Jay, he did use the line, I'll flash you another time.
Yep.
Which, right away, they've never even been on a date, and yet somehow that line endears him to her.
Yeah. Okay, so I will just quickly say this one thing about our newly established father in this movie. I do think Kay had one of the best, most actually well-delivered, emotionally packed, where when Laura is sort of in disbelief over the fact that she's the alien princess, and Tommy Lee Jones is explaining to her, you know, it always rains when you cry. And she's like, well, it rains a lot of time. And he says to her, it rains because you're sad, baby. And the way that he says baby, I didn't do it right there. The way I said it sounded a little bit pedophilic.
If you clock that, why are you wondering if she's his daughter?
Because I missed the scene earlier. I won't lie. This movie wasn't totally... Well, that's when I thought, oh, wait, is he her father? I missed the line before where Jay makes the joke about it.
So this is my feeling about Laura. So a couple of things happen at once. One is that... Jay's like, call the worms, ask her if she has a bracelet on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, have we seen that bracelet before? Does that pop up at any point in the movie before he calls?
Actually, I almost rewinded the movie, but I couldn't find my phone to actually rewind it.
I don't think it's there. And then he's like, haven't you always noticed how it rains when you cry? And I'm like, have we seen that either? And that's where I was like, seriously, did I black out on my couch for 20 minutes?
That I 100% remembered, because I remember her looking up through a... You know, she was in the back of the pizzeria when her former boss was killed by Lara Flynn Boyle, one of the few actresses I actually remember the name of. And I remember her looking up through windows and it was raining. And my first thought was, well, that's a really weird structure for a pizzeria in New York. And I was actually more confused about how they were using the space within a very dense populated area.
Sure.
But now I realized that was actually part of the plot.
Okay. All right. Well, then I tip my hat to the makers of Men in Black 2. That
only
was some
so
nice
far,
subtle filmmaking.
So let's not go too far. We have a lot of issues here.
Okay. I'm going to take a moment because I feel like the second that I talk about how funny I found this awful joke, I will forever just be banned from the internet.
Third rock from the sun.
No, this is worse. So David Cross is living in his mother's house with his girlfriend, and Agent J and Agent K are there trying to buy essentially knockoff deneuralizer from him.
Are we to assume that he is the same character he played in Men in Black 1?
I'm going to say yes, because why on earth else would you cast the same actor? Remember, he got deneuralized, so he wouldn't remember. But now he's obsessed with aliens, so yes, I've just worked through it. It is
just
the same character.
Just so we don't get comments, he got neuralized. Sorry. The first time.
Sorry.
Deneuralized is where your memories are restored to.
Yes. I'm sorry.
This is my sole function on the podcast, yeah. Jeff, is to...
I just get excited and get away with myself.
Correct Kim. Is to correct Kim, and then when MJ listens to our drafts, she's like, you are being awfully condescending about stuff like neuralizers.
You are. You are.
I know.
No, when I watch enough B-rated sci-fi movies that, no, you need to keep these things straight.
Okay.
This is key.
Dudes. The point of this story is this terrible joke, which is deeply offensive, but I will hold forever dear in my heart. David Cross is offering his mother's cooking to J&K.
Oh, you want pizza bagel? It's like a little bagel, but we put like some fontina cheese on.
Yeah, and then my mom has palsy, so there's like a lot of cheese.
Oh.
That was one of the best. I laughed, I felt bad, and then I laughed.
Okay. So I thought that was funny. I thought you were going to say something else, because then at the end, Jay neuralizes him and he's like, this is one of my favorite running jokes, is that Jay is obsessed with like giving people a happy,
better narrative.
Yeah. And he's like, you're going to go to Cambodia. You're going to get lobster. You're going to come back. You're going to get married. You're going to move out of your mom's house. Blah, 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 blah. He walks away. Then we stay on David Cross and his girlfriend. He's like, you want to go to Cambodia? And she's like, yeah. And you just hear him say, hey, mom. And then he picks up a shovel.
It's amazing.
I'm like, is he gonna fucking murder his mom for like money to go to Cambodia?
I realized how many of the people in this movie were actually terrible individuals from that actual scene.
And I have to imagine that was like a David Cross improv that no one cut. Like,
it
if
totally was.
It's on screen for half a second that he picks up a shovel.
I still think that is actually one of the funniest moments in this movie. It reminds me of when Agent K, for example, just shoots off somebody's head not knowing it will grow back. Like, these people are not good people. And when Agent J thinks he's doing something nice, it all of a sudden turns quite dark, which actually endears this movie to me in a certain way. And this is in the second half of the movie that I think was just well outperformed the first half.
So something that Jay does, just on that note, where it's actually quite dark. He's so well-intentioned when they deneuralize. No, when they neuralize.
There you go.
Sorry. Thank you. I'm not sorry at all. I'll say whatever I want. People know what I mean. So when Jay neuralizes the family, also the father, I think, is Barry Sonnenfeld,
director. Barry Sonnenfeld, yeah.
Yeah. He gives them their new narrative, and then he says, oh, and the little girl gets to eat candy, eat cake, stay up as late as want, whatever. And like, in Jay's mind, I know he thinks he's just being so nice and he's granting this girl a beautiful life. I'm looking at you right now, Jeff.
As a new father, I lost my mind when he said that. I said, this is absolutely insane. You're going to ruin that child.
Exactly.
She'll have no boundaries. She'll have no routine.
In his defense, he believes the world is ending in 28 minutes.
Doesn't matter.
All right.
He has no right to parent another child's parent.
And back to Men in Black 1, they know the world is ending in 28 minutes every 28 minutes.
You know what? Fair enough. I'm going to give you my biggest legitimate laugh in the movie.
Okay.
And this was a Will Smith thing. So I'll give you this. This is where I thought he was on fire. Mm-hmm. There's the countdown to when the rocket ship is taking off. And he's stuck in like a pile of rubber tubing.
Yes!
And he's just flopping around as it's going like 25, 24. And they hold on it so long.
He turns it off at literally the last 2 seconds, second.
Yeah. Well, and I like that as it's counting down, he finally gets out of the pile with like 7 seconds to go. And he takes a second to like readjust his suit jacket.
He knows he's got those seconds. He does.
But I don't want to go past this. We were talking about David Cross. Jeff, you brought a session. You brought a segment that you wanted us to do today that I think is fantastic.
Before you even get started, Jeff, he made me aware of this session as we were traveling together to my house. And I kept telling him, no, we can't talk about this. We can't talk about
this. Next time,
the entire movie started for me when David Putty, I don't actually know actors' names. I know
Patrick Warburton.
I don't know who
tick.
That is.
That's David Putty.
Yeah. All right. Moving on.
Yeah. No. I was giving you the assist.
He voices Kronk in The Emperor's New Groove.
Which, yes, that I actually did know. But again, I knew him as Putty voicing Kronk.
Okay.
But what that brought to me was, I'm going to remember so many people from the '90s right now, and then we see Tobias Fünke.
Yes.
we have Putty already. We have Johnny Knoxville, who I actually thought just, I forgot. And then the best one for me, for our Mighty Ducks fans out there, is Julie the Cat, who is Tobias Funke's girlfriend.
Oh my God.
And I actually,
I didn't recognize her.
Jeff, you mentioned this before we started recording, and I almost like threw up my hands and resigned from podcasting over the fact that I did not recognize Julie the Cat. That upsets me to my soul.
I literally called Ethan Hunt Ethan Hawke, but I will tell you, I mainly only know character names. If we're watching Lord of the Rings, a movie I've probably seen 30 times, I will not refer to Orlando Bloom. I will always refer to him as Legolas.
He's Legolas.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that is how I approach every movie.
I don't think
you'd
be upset with that.
And it helps me get lost in the characters. But when I saw Julie the Cat, it just something switched. I said, oh my God, that's got to be Julie the Cat.
How do you feel about the fact that she's probably getting murdered by Tobias Funke?
Well, she's not getting murdered. She's going to free trek to Cambodia. Mom,
so they can go to Cambodia. Yeah. Okay. They're going to inherit the house. That's property in New York.
And that's $1 lobster. Yeah. My parents are there right now. Apparently the lobster's, I mean, it's appreciated since 2002, so it's like $3.50. But
right. Okay. What's the better song, Men in Black or Wild Wild West?
Wild Wild West.
No!
Thank you.
No, it's
Thank
not.
Thank you.
It's
Debate
not
over.
Wait, did you actually think Men in Black?
You know what song I still Men have on my like workout playlist? Men in Black.
Listen, Men in Black is great.
Kim
says this on our last recording.
Kim says this. Get her to sing.
Kim says this on our last recording. She goes, Men in Black is better than Wild Wild West. And as I'm listening back to the recording, I hear myself say, fuck you, Mike. I'm like, whoa, that was maybe too far. But now that I'm here again, I'm like, no, you're so wrong.
No, she is so wrong. Wild Wild West.
I'm not saying that Wild Wild West isn't a great song. It is Wicka Wicka Wow Wow. Like, that's amazing. I love that. Who doesn't love that?
It literally sat on the top of the Much Music charts for 4 weeks. And I mean, maybe that dates us as Canadians, but my God, like, that was a great song.
I'm just saying, great song. In my heart, the song.
Also, don't fact check that 4 weeks.
Don't add us ever. The song that will forever live in my heart is Men in Black. I don't know why. I think it's just because I love the movie so much. So the movie has stayed with me. Ergo, the song has stayed with me. Whereas the movie Wild Wild West didn't stay with me. And like, I love Kevin Kline.
Was it the robotic spider? Anyways, let's not get into that.
It's like, we shouldn't, because it's not memorable. But the movie Men in Black is memorable. And I think that's why the song stayed with me much longer than Wild Wild West.
The romantic part of it, I found myself writing down constantly as I was watching the movie. And by writing, I mean typing, because my writing is illegible. was constantly, why are they together? Or why do they seem like they're together? Or why do they seem like they have a relationship? And
that
bothered me
that.
Beyond belief. And really, it wasn't until I read the IMDb trivia that I realized, oh, they had originally written it that way, and so many of the scenes just didn't really get adjusted.
Between Laurel and Jay?
Yeah, sorry, I should clarify. Laurel and Jay, that relationship, there was so much more there. And all of a sudden, apparently just based on an interview by a cop, they were supposed to have a relationship, which brings us back to the earlier issue we described regarding this movie and kind of the power of men over women.
Wait, what interview by a cop? Is this IMDb or another scene that I missed because I was scrolling through my phone?
Bored. This is Jay being a cop interviewing Rosario Dawson, I believe is her name.
Yep.
I think it's Velasquez in the movie.
Velasquez. Laura Velasquez. I like that both of you, there's a scene where he takes her to the diner. Both of you were like, this romantic subplot is undercooked. Here was my feeling watching that scene. I am currently on my wedding diet. Before I go buy my wedding suit.
You're on a wedding diet?
Thank you. I'm on my wedding diet.
No, shush.
So I'm sorry.
Billy, you're on a wedding diet?
I'm on a wedding diet.
When did that start?
Yeah, but what? A wedding diet can mean anything. That could mean donuts because he's trying to bulk up, you know.
Sure.
Get in.
It's a modified version of the Mediterranean diet. We need not go into it. Anyway, okay. I'm on my wedding diet. My thought watching that scene was, this man is going for pie twice in 2 days. That magnificent bastard. And I just felt sad.
So I actually thought, I looked at the top of the diner and I saw a light in the diner's roof. And I don't know if anyone else saw this, but they had a thing sticking out of it. And my first thought was, that's a light of Zartha. I realized I'm an idiot.
I totally thought that too. So it's like, it's like a novelty diner that has a spaceship crashed into it or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the whole plot of the first movie it's about like a spaceship hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, so thank you.
My whole thing was, oh, the spaceship in the roof just means it's like a safe hangout zone for aliens. That's as far as my brain went. I wasn't thinking hard
enough. I thought like it would be an MIB, like.
You got to remember, I also thought the opening scene was a construction of MIB, which was also a construction of the U.S. government in order to throw us off the case. So
the Columbia. I might
have got a bit
neuralizer
deep.
Later. Well, you were just excited to be on the podcast. You were thinking in overdrive.
I just.
So, okay.
Do we want to cover off? I did really want to talk about some of the tech in this movie compared to the first movie.
Go for it.
Okay. And so, one of the issues I did want to bring up, given the past podcast focusing on Mission Impossible, is you always had a section on kind of the tech,
best gadgets,
yeah, and everything across the board. And I absolutely love that section. It usually the end of a podcast is pretty dull, and I absolutely love the fact that made me want to listen to the end of every podcast so I could hear that section of it. What were your favorite kind of gadgets involvements in this movie? I had some serious issues with them. The biggest one being the neuralizer. They turned from
deneuralizer. Neuralizer.
Now, it's like you didn't even watch the movie, Kim.
Now, my biggest issue was they moved from the neuralizer being a very one-off. You know, it was very unique in how it was used. And all of a sudden, now you can just flash everybody in public.
Yeah.
It just has a neuralizer, like.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just a little ridiculous, which I wasn't a huge fan of. Nonetheless, I think some of the tech they could have gone overboard with, but they didn't.
Okay.
And so I guess I'm wondering from your perspective, what was your favorite tech?
Do you have a candidate while we think about it?
I mean, I love that they brought the cricket back.
Yep.
Yeah. But I will say,
that's also the problem. They're recycling jokes from the first recycling movie.
But also, the cricket barely hurt a guy, but also put a hole in a tractor trailer in the first movie. And that actually like woke me up. I was kind of watching the movie going, you know, that actually destroyed a city block in the first movie, but apparently it just hurt a guy in the second movie.
I'll tell you, in this movie, I love Jay's little flip phone, video phone, because thing was out of date in 3 years. When does the iPhone first come out? It's not long after this movie.
I mean,
I don't know.
Whether it's the phone or the Palm Pilot, I'm not sure which one knocks it out, but it's not long after.
It's entirely possible that in 2002 there was already better technology than that. So that like just made me happy. I don't know why. I like that. I liked the mail sorting machine that actually is just an alien sitting in the bottom
you.
Of it.
Thank you. I was going to bring it up, but I was hoping someone else would bring it up. Is just that everything that's great in the world is actually not ours.
Yeah.
Well, because my first dumb thought was like, do post offices actually have those?
No,
like,
I think that was actually one of the greatest jokes of the movie. So for those of you who haven't had the joy of rewatching Men in Black 2 lately, where Kay has been like working as a neutral means citizen who isn't aware of aliens, is at a post office. And what's so great about the joke and what's so great about how they've written this character and this scene is that when Jay first encounters him, Kay is still Kay. He's called Kevin now, but he's still 100% Kay. He's ordering everyone around like it is a military operation. And as Jay reveals to him that he's actually part of this like government agency that polices alien, polices is the word I'm using deliberately here, on the planet. He says, why do you think you're so comfortable here at the post office? And it's revealed that we have to talk about how it's revealed that all of his coworkers are aliens. We got it. The fact that, like, okay, so Jay starts beatboxing at him.
Yeah, he's trying to speak this alien's language, which sounds an awful lot like early 2000s beatboxing.
Yeah. You know, as much as I'm endeared towards the camaraderie between Smith and Jones, watching this movie ultimately is a disappointment because there's nothing about it that is meant to last. This movie only exists in 2002.
So, okay, I have a couple of questions on that. Let me just start with one really quick. Are you actually charmed by the camaraderie between Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith in this movie? Because that part of it actually bummed me out. We highlighted that as like maybe the best thing about Men in Black 1. Yeah. And here I feel like it's not working quite as well.
Do you want that? No, not at all. I mean, the way they actually dealt with the deneuralizer just ruined it for me, like from start to finish. In the first movie, I mean, they're able to go from, you know, there's a somebody who grew up under and was trained under a different set of rules, and then somebody who was trained under a different set of regulations. Then they kind of came together and found the medium ground, and you completely lose that in the second one. And they make zero attempt to try to turn that into a story. And to me, that's one of the big issues with the second one is I absolutely love J and K in the first one. To me, I could see myself as J, I could see myself as K. I could see myself being involved in either situation. You know,
Could you, though?
Are you kidding me? Running down somebody with a cricket? Yeah, okay. I can. Maybe I've watched, again, too many B sci-fi movies, but I've got some issues.
You've done your research. And,
like, it does one of my least favorite sequel things, which is purely through dialogue, they try to sell us on the fact that Kay is unhappy in retirement. But when we actually see him in the post office, he looks like he's having a blast.
Oh, he's happy,
like,
as shit.
He's busting balls with the community. And this whole, like, he has a whole arc in Men in Black 1 that feels very earned, that, like, he has passed the torch to someone new. And now he wants out to go rejoin the love of his life.
Okay,
thank you.
I do want to talk about this a little bit because I think it is something. So here are some of the problems with the movie. I do want to quickly give you my hot take on the camaraderie between J and K.
Okay.
It's what I think it is just an extension of what we all fell in love with in the first Men in Black, right? And that is why. That's why we love franchises, right? Like, franchises are the OG of TV, like, as we know TV now, right? We love these people. We love these stories that they're in, and that's why we keep coming back. That's why we all lined up as teenagers to watch Lord of the Rings 2 and 3, and it's just...
Let's not... No.
That's
now,
a special okay, subject.
Two out of three of the people here lined up to watch.
Now, I absolutely... No, I was the first person.
Oh, okay. Movie,
right. Now, I think, and maybe I cut you off a bit early, and I apologize for that, but I think one of the pieces you mentioned is, you know, you feel an attachment to these characters, you feel an attachment to these individuals. Now, what I want to ask you is, when I think about the sequels that I really, really loved, mm-hmm. absolutely loved, when you think about it, what characters from those sequels were you attached to? The characters, were you attached to the story? What made you go back to the theater? And to me it's quite clear. But at the same time, I always ask other people, it's what made you go back to the sequel? Because one of the most fascinating parts, and I was ecstatic when you guys asked me to cover Men in Black 2, was what actually brought you to the theater, or what would make people want to watch Men in Black 2?
So what was your answer to that
question? Yeah, I want to hear your answer, Jeff? Before we go.
Oh, thanks. So,
you're welcome.
So you're just making me deal.
Well, no, I can go if you don't.
So for me is, I expect more development on the J&K part.
Right.
That's what I want to see. When I go to see Lord of the Rings 2, I want to see that. There's a reason we probably have a different...
Legolas and Gimli. On, you want more.
Okay, Two Towers is the greatest movie of all time. Let's not.
It has the greatest battle scene of all time, hands down.
Correct.
Yes. Agreed. Move on.
But nonetheless, Mission Impossible 2, for example, I went there, and maybe this is why we differ in opinion, but I wanted to see a development on the Ethan Hunt side. Or I wanted to see development in the characters. Whenever I see a second movie, I want to see a development toward the trilogy. It might be from books I've read as a kid. Like, I want to see that development coming through, but a lot of those just really don't hit that stage.
Okay, I see what you're getting at. So what I know I don't want to see is what happens here, which is where development with a character goes backwards. That is always disappointing. So, like, frankly, Bourne Supremacy, which is a movie I love, 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 mm-hmm. opens in the most disappointing way, where, like, spoilers from Bourne Supremacy. His new happy existence that he gets at the end of Bourne Identity. His wife is just assassinated carelessly. And
by the way, a hot take: Bourne Supremacy is the best sequel to any series of all time.
I thought you were going to say the best one of that series, and I probably would have been with you.
Well, it is the best movie of that series, but it's also the best sequel to, I think, any first movie.
So Jeff, we're gonna have
with Temple of Doom.
Oh, I'm working. I'm working.
Subscribers. There's a new level for you.
That's going to the box with Temple of Doom. But let me give you the answer to your question. So I never want to see characters go back. What I want out of a sequel is either all character or no character. So I want a situation where yes, they're going to take the character farther. They're gonna take the story and keep it moving on, and getting to return to that character and see them move forward is like that. Just like sets my heart on fire. I am also equally happy though if we are doing a James Bond thing where like James Bond is our tour guide to a new story in a new world, and he's an old friend. He's not going to change. There's not going to be development. It's kind of how I feel about Indiana Jones. There's been like, you know, Temple of Doom tries to do a little bit of character development, right? Because it's a prequel. It's the only one that actually does character development.
That's all right.
All right.
Whatever.
But in general, right, Indiana Jones doesn't change.
I try not to be sassy, but like, come on.
In general, Indiana Jones doesn't change. She takes us on a new adventure to get a new thing, right?
It changes, but
why? So I am happy with either like a sequel that is fully character focused, and that's why we're doing another one, or one that is not character focused at all. It's just a new episode starring old friends. What I hate is something like Men in Black 2, where it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, and they fuck up both parts of it.
And I think that's a lot of the issue I take with the movie is they just recycle the jokes. They don't try to advance the characters at all. And I mean, it makes for a bad movie. But I will say the second half of the movie was enjoyable.
Can you highlight what you liked about the second half?
Let me go to my notes.
Okay, please do. Because while you do that, Kim, I just want to return to something you said. You made the point about like, well, they spent $140 million and like they didn't do anything with it in terms of like forwarding our status as human people. I am completely okay with a studio spending $140 million and employing a bunch of unionized people and keeping an industry going and it putting food on the table for a bunch of hardworking people, you know? And like, even if the movie is kind of a complete flop and like doesn't contribute anything beyond that, I'm kind of okay with it. Like in so many ways, it's a more palatable industry for me than many others.
Yeah.
By no means does that make filmmaking free from judgment.
No,
because
I think it also, like, not to totally interrupt, but your partner is an actor and I think you have a different view and experience into this industry that I do. And as I say this out loud, I want the best for you at all times if you're listening.
But
right
like
now.
You and I have both worked in creative fields.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that we always have to be changing the world and whatever, like I think can kind of be poisonous sometimes. Sometimes we need to be making a product that people want for whatever possible reason, and we all get a paycheck at the end of the day.
Now when you think about these movies, could Men in Black 2 be made not in the way it was made?
Oh,
and not And
put
not
a woman on
jobs.
That screenplay team. Like could they have
reworded the script?
And that's
And that's the issue I take with it personally.
No, and that's exactly where I am. My issue is they needed to clean up some of the bad shit in this movie, but I don't need them to. I don't know. Make a poignant commentary on human suffering that touches me in my soul. Did you find the word Balchinian funny?
Hilarious.
Okay, so.
So we have one vote for hilarious. Kim, where do you stand?
Here's the thing. You watch this joke happen in real time, as I did very recently, and I just went, okay, that's disgusting, as you see the scrotum on the alien's face. And then it like they make a joke out of it, and you're like, oh, no, they're actually going for a scrotum. And then they call it out, and they say, oh, he's a Balchinian. And then like there's the joke made where like the punching happens. And
He kicks him.
He doesn't punch him.
He does a full-on Trinity
and I went,
jump.
Oh, this joke is not for me. This joke is for men who were once 12 years old.
No, that is an incorrect take.
Here's all I want to pull the group on. Because I think you could have got to a place where there is a funnier word than Balchinian.
Like, what name would you use for somebody who has balls for a chin?
Scrozebo.
See, I would have gone for something with the word testicles, like testiculons or something. The word Chinian is funny to me. Ball doesn't work.
Chinian
is fantastic.
Testachinian would have made me laugh just a lot harder.
Well, there's a little more.
Testachinian is amazing.
Right?
Testachinian is absolutely what it should have been.
We might have hit it. Testachinian is pretty
Testachinian.
Good.
Testachinian. Anyway. Testachinian get a little more action in there.
Right? Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's more syllables. It's good. Yeah. Anyway, in the first draft, it was gonado neck.
Sorry, I hit the mic.
Apparently, our friend Kim was nowhere near that.
Okay, so Kim votes for gonado neck.
Gonado neck is
apparently... I vote for gonado neck.
I think we've done God's work here today.
I think so, too.
Jeff, you have been a godsend. Thank you for making what was easily my most dreaded episode of the podcast a pure delight.
I didn't know how this was going to go, and I just have to say, it's been a blast.
Podcasters, just so you know, the face on Billy was much more emphatic than what he let on, but nonetheless, I was more than happy to join. He was quite sincere, but nonetheless, thank you for having me, and I was absolutely overjoyed to have joined Kim and Billy on discussing Men in Black 2.
Fantastic. We look forward to having you back for our next secret project. Well, on that note, I think we should thank Aaron Kosser for our fantastic artwork. You can also check us out on Twitter at Kim and Billy Talk.
And I would just like to mention one of the reasons I'm actually on here tonight is thanks to a good friend of mine who actually is a podcaster himself, so they run PredictoCast, where they also look at various movies and various unknown films that you maybe have not watched. But
so whatever app you're on right now, please look up PredictoCast and subscribe. And I think other than that, Elvis is not dead.
He's just left the building.
And we'll see you next week. So it was flat, like, basically pizza crust. Yeah. With sauce and toppings, a bagel bite is something very, very different.
Oh,
you get
very
a whole
different.
Tray of them.
And you cannot put them in the microwave. That would ruin them.
No, those have to go in the oven.
Those have to go in the oven.
The bagel bite's arguably the more fancy. It's the fancier.
Oh, you
food.
Can
it's
put anything in the microwave food. If you believe hard enough.
The problem with a bagel going in the microwave is that it comes out very soggy. It's like... It,